program does not create an attorney-client relationship between Moss and Barnett, a professional association, or any attorney appearing on this program and any caller or listener. Please remember that we can only give general information, and every case is unique. Always check with your individual attorney for any specific legal concerns. If you are in need of specific legal advice or are looking for an attorney, please do not hesitate to give Moss and Barnett a call at 612-877-5000.
This is WCCO's Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett.
Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way each and every Saturday at noon. I'm Steve Thompson. Big thanks to our studio coordinator, as always, Dennis Matuzak. Tom Schroyer joins us in studio. And Tom, we have a repeat guest on the program today.
We do, Steve. And I must say that in keeping with the fishing opener motif, it's a whopper.
Outstanding.
Although I'm looking at my colleague, my co-shareholder at Moss and Barnett, Philly Young, and I'm wondering if he meets the weight limit.
Throw me back, Tom.
All right. And so, yes, we have Phil Young in studio with us as our guest today. Phil is a shareholder with Moss and Barnett and has a practice that focuses on business and commercial litigation of large and complex disputes. And as well, he advises clients regularly on how to avoid disputes. And I know, Phil, your practice also covers trust and probate litigation.
It does, Tom. And first of all, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here back on the show.
Yes, you were back last August in at the State Fairgrounds. So this time you get to wear the headset and work the big mic.
That's exactly right.
Now, for our listeners, Steve, I would say that Phil also has a number of distinguishing life events. So first of all, he's the mayor, the sitting mayor of the city of Eden Prairie. And Phil, thank you for your public service to the community for that. I know that's a lot of time commitment on your part and often goes unnoticed by others.
Well, I appreciate that, Tom. And the firm, of course, has been very supportive of my efforts of public service, and it's really been a treat for me to be able to serve the residents of Eden Prairie as mayor.
I know in that regard you were over in China on a Goodwill mission not too long ago.
We were. In fact, I went along with our local Chamber of Commerce, and one of the purposes of the trip was to further develop a relationship between the city of Eden Prairie and the city of Lodi, which is a city in mid-central China that Eden Prairie has been trying to develop a relationship with, both an economic, governmental, and with their school district now for about 4 years.
How's that going?
It's going great. We are now starting to make some progress. We are sending delegations over there. They have sent delegations over twice. I think this summer we're actually going to – the city is going to host some students from Lodi. And one of the long-term goals as far as the school districts are concerned is to have a formal exchange not only of students but also of teachers.
All right. Now, I know you're a trial lawyer, so I'm going to ask you a setup question here. Bear with me. First of all, I would say that to our listeners, Phil is a graduate of the University of Minnesota Law School, and he was an alum of Notre Dame as an undergraduate. And Phil, as a domer, I understand, you were on the boxing club there at school.
Tom, I did. We do have a boxing club at Notre Dame, and after 2 years of that, I realized that having flat feet and being slow does not make for a very good boxer.
All right. Well, here's my question. It's a multiple choice question. Your boxing career was most useful in A, your career as a trial lawyer, B, serving as the mayor, or C, being the father and presiding over four boys?
Tom, the answer to that is C.
All right. I thought it might be. Well, today we're going to talk, Phil, with you about the Minnesota Termination of Sales Representatives Act and that law as it intersects with another state law in Minnesota that protects independent commissioned sales agents. How did you get started working in this area?
Tom, I had my first case under that statute. It was almost 10 years ago. And again, it's a type of case that we see almost every year.
Because year in and year out.
Year in, year out. I mean, there are manufacturers, there are a lot of manufacturers in Minnesota which sell through the use of independent agents. And there are also a lot of small to medium-sized sale agencies which are protected by the statute and might be going through some change in any given year with the manufacturers that they represent.
Well, before we talk about the legal background and issues, I think it's always important to define what the situation is in the economic circumstances for these people. What do they do? What role do they play in the economy? And how do these disputes arise?
Well, those are good questions, Tom. Let me begin by saying that when we're talking about sales representatives, they go by other names. Sometimes they're called manufacturer's representatives. Other times they're called manufacturer's agents. But generally what they do is, you know, first of all, they are usually independent, so they are not employees of the manufacturers whose goods they're dealing with. Second, they are almost always paid on a commission basis. So if they don't sell, they don't earn. And third, at least as far as the Minnesota statute is concerned, their ultimate job is to place goods in retail stores for sales to consumers.
And so how do they differ from, other kinds of, call them middlemen or intermediaries?
Well, they're different than a middleman or an intermediary, Tom, in that they never take ownership of the goods themselves. I mean, they are purely a sales function. They go to retail stores and they try to convince the retailers to carry those products, as opposed to a distributor of a product, which may actually take ownership or may actually be branding under a manufacturer's name in order to distribute the products themselves.
All right. Do they play an important role in our economy?
Absolutely they do, Tom, because it's important to keep in mind that not all manufacturers are large enough or have the resources to have large inside sales groups. So many times, if you're talking about small to medium-sized manufacturers, they need independent reps to place the products.
We have more coming up on this topic. Once again, Minnesota sales rep wage and commission payment protection laws. Phil Young is in studio. Tom Schroyer, a host on the program. It is Minnesota Law. We should point out phone numbers on the program, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well, 81807. The text, 81807. Questions and comments here on Minnesota Law, presented by Morrison Burnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us on Minnesota Law each and every Saturday at noon, presented by Morrison Burnett. Available online at moss-burnett.com. Phil Young joining us in studio today. Tom Schroyer, host on the program. We are talking about Minnesota's sales rep wage and commission payment protection laws. And before the break, you were talking about these reps that deal with businesses. Phil, maybe you can give us some examples of what types of products are sold. It sounds like it's a long line.
Absolutely, Stephen. And really, it can be virtually any product which is sold at retail. It can be sporting goods, snack foods, furniture, plant seeds, medical devices. I've had cases which have touched upon each of those products.
Phil, as we're looking to get into the legal situation here established by Minnesota law concerning these sales reps, what are the economic dynamics that gave rise to the need to even have protection as we have in Minnesota for these types of business owners?
Well, Tom, keep in mind we're talking about people who are only paid by commission. And commonly what happens is that a manufacturer will go to an independent agency in order to get into a new market. So you'll have a manufacturer might want to come to Minnesota without doing any sales in Minnesota. So they'll hire this rep agency, and the rep agency will take 6 months, a year, maybe even 2 years of not getting paid and trying to develop the relationships at retail stores in order to place the products. And what every rep agency fears is that as soon as those relationships are developed and sales orders start to come in, that they will lose the relationship with the manufacturer and thus not enjoy the fruits of any of their labor.
So all of that goodwill, in effect, is pulled out from under them, at least without or in the absence of this law that we're going to talk about, which is known as the Termination of Sales Representative Law in Minnesota. And as I understand it, that's a rather unique law.
Tom, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are in many states statutes which protect commission salespeople for commissions which they've actually earned. But as far as our statute, which affects the ability of a manufacturer to either terminate or to not renew an actual relationship with a sales representative, we stand alone in the states, and I think it is the Protectorate of Puerto Rico, which is the only other U.S. province which has a similar statute.
So this statute is extremely unique. I assume that in itself gives rise to some kinds of litigation issues.
Well, Tom, it often does, because many times we have in-state rep agencies which are dealing with out-of-state manufacturers, and those out-of-state manufacturers enter into the relationships not knowing that Minnesota has this law.
All right, so very briefly, who is a sales rep that is protected under this statute? Who qualifies for this benefit?
Well, there really are three criteria, Tom. I mean, first, of course, is that they need to be independent. So if they are an employee of the manufacturer, they are not covered. They need to be paid on a commission basis. And three, and perhaps most importantly, they need to be placing or obtaining wholesale orders for goods for ultimate sale at retail.
And help us here distinguish, what does that mean, that last category?
Well, what it means, Tom, is if the rep agency is making the ultimate sale to the consumer, they're not covered by the statute. They need to be selling to a store, either a large retailer or the neighborhood convenience store.
Does having a goods held on consignment qualify for protection under this statute?
Tom, if the sales rep takes the goods on an assignment basis or ever takes an ownership interest in the goods, they are not protected by the statute.
Are people moving to Minnesota to take advantage of this law?
Well, they may shortly, Tom, after they know more about it.
All right. And so is it also necessary to be a Minnesota resident to qualify?
Tom, in order to enjoy the protections as a sales rep, you need to either be a Minnesota resident, you need to have your principal place of business be in Minnesota, or a part of your territory needs to include Minnesota.
How about giving us a quick overview of how the statute works, when it was passed, and how it works, just very generally, and then we'll take it apart and look at the specifics.
Sure. Tom, we've had the statute since about 1991. It was passed at that time. So we have had a number of years to get to know it a little bit, and it's only been amended once, and that was back in 2007. What it generally does, Tom, is two things. One is that it does impose restrictions on an ability of a manufacturer to terminate its relationship with the sales agent, and it also puts a limitation on the ability of a manufacturer to what the statute calls not renew a relationship with the sales manu- or with an independent agency.
And I imagine that this protection isn't limitless, however.
No, Tom, it's not. But I think perhaps the best way to discuss the distinction between termination and non-renewal might be to provide an example.
Go ahead.
I mean, commonly when you're talking about termination, say that you are a manufacturer and you hire a sales rep and you give them a 5-year contract to represent Minnesota. 2 years into the contract, you're no longer satisfied with the performance of that sales rep. And if you want to end the relationship. Under those circumstances, you're talking about terminating the agency. And what the statute says is that you cannot terminate unless, A, you have good cause, and the statute gives you some examples of what good cause can be, and, B, you need to give the representative an opportunity, what we call notice and opportunity to cure. In other words, you need to give the rep agency a fair chance to improve their performance.
All right, and that's for termination while a contract is in effect, whether it has a limited term or an indefinite term.
That's exactly right, Tom. On the other hand, we also have non-renewal of the contract. And typically, again, let's take the example where you have an agent which has a 5-year contract in Minnesota, but you're in year 4 of the contract now, and the contract's coming up for renewal. If you're a manufacturer and you don't want to renew the contract and there's a definite endpoint to that contract, you have to give at least 90 days' notice if you don't want to renew the contract.
And failing the manufacturer complying with these rights, what are the generally the remedies in a very broad stated way?
Well, the statute gives an aggrieved sales rep a couple options. I mean, they can technically sue for reinstatement, although that pretty much never happens. I mean, generally the fight is about money. They want to be paid for ending the relationship.
And so are there also remedies for attorney's fees and other types of damages?
Well, there are, Tom. And what the statute provides is, again, first of all, the statute provides that if you're a sales rep and you've been terminated and you're unhappy with that, you can either arbitrate your dispute or you can go to district court and you can initiate formal litigation. And I make that distinction because, again, the statute gives different remedies depending on which path you choose.
And we'll have more on this topic coming up following our break for the news and weather here on Minnesota Law. Phil Young in studio, Tom Schroyer, the host. Minnesota Sales Rep Wage and Commission Payment Protection Laws continues in a moment. Once again, it's Minnesota Law, presented by Morrison Barnett, here on News Radio 830 WCCO. Thanks so much for joining us, Minnesota Law. each and every Saturday at noon, presented by Moss and Burnett. Tom Schroyer, our host, joining us in studio today. Phil Young, Minnesota sales rep, wage and commission payment protection laws in the spotlight. You can call the program anytime. Questions, comments, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. You can text the studio as well. It's a new feature, 81807. You can text to 81807.
Thanks, Steve. We're back with Phil Young in studio talking about Minnesota's termination of sales representative protection law. And, Phil, we were over viewing the law just before the break. I want to now drill down a bit. And one of the things you talked about was the ability of a manufacturer to terminate a sales rep during the term of a contract for something you called good cause. What does that mean?
Well, Tom, if you look at the examples in the statute, they're pretty limited. I mean, the statute says that good cause can include, for example, if the sales rep declares bankruptcy, if they abandon their business, if they do something to impair the goodwill associated with the manufacturer's products. Those are the most common examples, but those are not necessarily exclusive, because the statute also gives the parties the right to define for themselves what might constitute good cause for ending that relationship.
They can define that in their contractual agreement.
That's exactly right. They can put it in writing.
Now, speaking of that, does this law, which passed in, you said, what, 1991, does that have retroactive application?
Well, Tom, actually, and I do need to correct myself. I said before that there has only been one amendment to the statute. In fact, there were two, because at the time that the statute was originally passed, it applied to all contracts then in existence. And there was a challenge made to the statute which said, hold on a second, if there's a contract currently in place, what the state really is doing is changing the terms of the deal, and that's not constitutional. And they were right. So the legislature amended the statute the next year and said, okay, it only applies to contracts which are going to either renew or begin in the future.
All right. So I suppose by now that covers just about every contract.
That's exactly right, Tom.
So if a manufacturer believes that it has good cause for terminating one of these sales representatives, are there some procedures that need to be followed in order to invoke that?
Well, in fact, yes, there are. And we talked about it a little bit before the break. And typically, the manufacturer needs to provide written notice at least 90 days in advance, and it also needs to provide that sales agent with an opportunity to correct the problem.
I imagine things can get kind of testy and gnarly around whether or not the sales rep has either been given adequate notice or has corrected the issue.
That's exactly right, Tom. And if you know, but by the time the problems arise, usually it's too difficult to go back and repair the relationship. But typically, notice isn't given. And you see that very commonly. And there's a big dispute between the manufacturer and the representative about the circumstances which constitute good cause.
What are the most common reasons given for terminating a sales rep, in your experience?
Tom, most often the manufacturer feels that the sales agent hasn't been adequately promoting the line. They've been spending more attention on other lines, and for some reason sales aren't going as they thought that they would, and that they want to blame the sales rep for that.
Well, do you ever see examples of really egregious behavior by the manufacturer and just wanting to really treat the sales rep unfairly, for example, by just giving the business to a friend or a relative instead?
Well, again, Tom, you know, the stereotypical concern, and you know, the concern that you know, the territory will be taken away arbitrarily. Have I seen that? Sure, I have. I mean, that happens, and that does happen in cases, and I have seen that.
We have phone lines open on the program today, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. If you have a question for the program and you don't want to call in, but you can text the studio, that's an option, 81807. That's 81807. We go to Josh in Maple Grove. Josh, you're on the air with Phil Young and Tom Schroyer. Hello.
How's it going, fellas? Yeah, I'm a rep myself, actually, and it's funny that you guys are discussing this because I deal with this issue literally every day with dozens of different vendors. My question to you is this. I mean, I have current agreements with my manufacturers, and my question is, does this law or statute supersede my agreements? Could, for instance, if I have, if I've agreed to, you know, with certain manufacturers under different governing law for different states, and things like that. Can I always, you know, sign these agreements so that the manufacturer will not, you know, will approve of the agreement, but then, you know, in the background, the statute will always be there to my benefit?
That's a very good question. We really appreciate the call. And Phil, what is the answer?
Well, Josh, you do raise some very good questions, and also some questions which commonly come up involving the statute. And what oftentimes happens, is, as we talked about a little bit before, is that you will have a situation between an in-state rep and an out-of-state manufacturer. And if you have a written contract, sometimes you will have a provision in that contract which says, it's called the choice of law provision, which says that this contract will be interpreted under the laws of, and then it'll say what state's laws will apply. Now, generally speaking, in Minnesota, those types of provisions are enforceable. So if you are in business, you're located in Minnesota, and, for example, you enter into a contract with a California-based company, and the contract says the laws of the state of California will apply, then that provision is something which a court will uphold. It will uphold it in the context of the statute. And this is one way that you can essentially lose the protection of the statute.
I thought there was some exception here for a particular industry, though, Phil.
Well, you know what? There is. And that in fact, is the one exception which I had in mind when we first brought up amendments to the statute. Apparently, we have the lobby which supports the sales reps who engage in plumbing supplies is very strong because they got an amendment to the statute in 2007 so that type of choice of law provision, which would have the effect of forcing the sales rep to lose the benefit of this law, no longer can happen for those who engage in the distribution of plumbing supplies.
So plumbing supply and equipment reps cannot waive or give up the protection by the statute, but then I take it because the statute says that they are protected, that everyone else is fair game for a manufacturer to impose different rules, different laws than the statute provides.
Tom, that's absolutely right.
All right.
It would seem to me that any independent rep like this would want any of their contracts reviewed so they maintain the protection of Minnesota law whenever possible.
Steve, I think that's absolutely right. That's a very good point. And I think that is one of the lessons, I think, from this statute, and applies not just to sales representatives, not just to manufacturers, but I think to commercial entities in all fields. It makes a lot of good sense to look carefully at the contracts and get professional advice before you sign the contracts.
It is amazing that people feel powerless when they come to see us, and while it's not the case that we can change the economic leverage that they might have in a negotiation, it's surprising how often just giving a little pushback, just working the edges around a contract can actually be quite effective in the long run for protecting someone's rights.
Yeah, Tom, that's absolutely right. And I think it's also a function of the fact that so often when you enter into these relationships, you just want to think about the positives and of working together and doing good business together. And you don't really give a lot of thought to what's going to happen if the relationship sours. What are my rights?
All right. Let's talk for a moment here, briefly at least, about the different kind of way that these agreements can come to an end, not just for good cause and a notice of termination and a right to cure, but if an agreement has a particular time period that it is ending at, or if it even is indefinite for a period of time, what about the renewal or the carryover of the agreement between periods?
Good question, Tom. And we talked a little bit before about the termination of agreements. And we also talked about the non-renewal of an agreement which has a defined endpoint. But the most common situation, Tom, involves the non-renewal of an agreement which does not have a defined endpoint. In other words, we're talking about a relationship which typically begins with a handshake. A manufacturer hires a rep and says, we want you to cover Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin for us, and they never talk about when that relationship's going to end. Now, the legislature anticipated that when they passed this statute because they said, if you do have a relationship between a manufacturer and a sales rep which doesn't have a defined end period, we're going to assume that the end period will be 180 days from the date that the manufacturer gives you notice that they don't want to renew the contract.
Back to the phones we go on, Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Jess in Minneapolis, you're on the program with Phil Young and Tom Schroyer. Hello.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
I have two questions, if I may. I'm a seasonal agent, and often we present programs 12 months in advance. The purchase orders are placed 6 months after that, and we are paid as much as 3 months after that. If we're terminated before the purchase orders we've placed are shipped, do we have a right to be paid?
Jess, you raise a good question, and it's a question which also often comes up with sales reps or indeed anyone who works on a commission basis. The answer to the question really doesn't come from this statute, the termination of sales representative statute. It really comes from a related statute, which I think we were also going to cover today. It's called the Commission Protection Statute. And what that statute provides is that at the time of termination, someone who is paid on the basis of commission is entitled to be paid all of the commissions which they have earned up to that time. But the trick under that statute is that, you know, manufacturers and agents have the right to themselves determine when commissions are earned. So sometimes, you know, the policy may be that commissions are earned when a sale is made. Sometimes it may be that commissions are earned when shipment happens. Or even other times, the practice may be that commissions are earned when payment is received from the customer.
All right, we want to go back to Jess one more time. Jess, a quick follow-up?
Well, actually, I had a second question.
All right, very good.
I have a vendor who has decided not to renew us. They have that right, I acknowledge that, but they have not named any replacement, and we are still handling all of our customers, and we are still writing many purchase orders. And we want to do that on the basis of our relationship with our customers. And I'm also wondering if we can get paid in that situation, because it's been told to me that we will not be paid for those.
Well, just again, as a general proposition, under the Commission Protection Statute, someone who works on the basis of commission is entitled to be paid for all the commissions which they have earned, for the work which they do as defined by the practices of the agent and the manufacturers they represent.
And certainly, wouldn't you agree, Phil, that in this situation that was described by Jess, the prior course of conduct or course of dealing would provide a useful guide for determining when the commission is actually earned, thereby triggering the right to the protection of the commission payment statute?
Tom, that's exactly right, because when we're talking about, you know, when commissions are earned, sometimes that is defined in a contract between a manufacturer or and the sales rep. And other times, though, it is determined by the course of dealing, the historical course of dealing between those two parties.
We will be back. Final segment of the program coming up. Phil Young in the studio. Tom Schroyer, host on the program. Minnesota sales rep, wage and commission payment protection laws. In the spotlight today on Minnesota Law, presented by Morris and Barnett. You're on News Radio 830 WCCO. It is Minnesota Law, presented by Morris and Barnett, Saturday at noon. Tom Schroyer, our host, Phil Young, in the studio. By the way, today's program will be available online very shortly at WCCORadio.com, or if you prefer, 830WCCO.com, and in the coming week, will be available at the Morris and Barnett website, moss-barnett.com.
Steve, thank you so much. We're going to wrap up here by talking with Phil Young about the remedies and procedures for getting remedies for sales representatives who are have their rights under this Minnesota protection law violated. Phil, where does it all start?
Well, Tom, the first choice which an aggrieved rep needs to decide is what forum do they want the dispute to be held in, because the statute gives them an option of either choosing arbitration, which is a form of private dispute resolution, or suing out in district court.
And if the party elects arbitration, is that the kind of procedure we've been talking about on the show before as an alternative to going to court?
That's exactly right, Tom.
And so that is a way to do it privately and hopefully faster, maybe less expensively?
I think the historical benefits of arbitration were perceived to be certainly the privacy, the speed. Whether or not it can be done less expensively, I don't know if that's been borne out.
What kind of remedies are available if a rep is terminated without good cause, or if a manufacturer fails to give the notice required by the statute?
Well, Tom, the statute says that the arbitrator can order reinstatement of the rep, although that generally doesn't happen because, again, the focus usually is on money damages. And so the arbitrator is also empowered to order the payment of commissions which haven't been paid. In addition to that, damages beyond those commissions, and finally, the recovery of attorney's fees.
Those attorney's fees can be a nice help to the individual who's been aggrieved here under the statute.
Tom, I think that's right, and I think if you look, compare the options of the remedies available between arbitration and suing out in district court, it is a recovery of attorney's fees, which really is the most important distinction.
How about that wage commission statute? Does that have an attorney's fee protection benefit as well?
Actually, Tom, yes, it does. In Minnesota, each of the statutes which we have, which cover either employees, independent contractors, or commission salespeople, for earned commissions or earned wages which haven't been paid, also provide an opportunity to recover attorney's fees if you're successful.
Now, if the manufacturer fails to honor Minnesota's law with regard to protecting these rights, is it possible for the manufacturer's rep or sales rep to get some actually pretty significant dollars in damages?
Tom, actually, it can be, and I think more recently we've come to understand exactly how the courts are going to apply the damages provisions of the statute. Because as I said before, I mean, the most common situation, the most common fact pattern is that you have a manufacturer and a rep with a handshake deal and something goes wrong. And the statute says under those circumstances it's presumed that your relationship was going to end 180 days after the notice of termination. And so for many years, Tom, lawyers and practitioners thought that it was only that 100-day window that you could recover commissions for.
And so have there been some large awards?
Actually, Tom, there has been. There was actually in federal court in Minnesota just a couple years back a case in which an aggrieved rep received 4.5 years of lost profits after termination.
That must have amounted to $1 million or more.
Tom, it was just over $1 million.
Wow. Phil, it's been great. Thanks so much for joining us today on the program. Phil Young in studio, Tom Schroyer, our host. Tom, what's next week?
We'll have Marcy Frost back to talk about employment law quirks under Minnesota state employment law.
That is next Sunday at noon here on Minnesota Law, presented by Moss and Barnett. Available online at moss-barnett.com. Don't forget, the podcast of today's show will be available on Sunday at 830wcco.com.